Blog Talk Radio.
The Healing Circle is a panel composed of spiritual teacher Kat Edwards and myself, David Clark, a former social worker. We come together every week for topical discussions in which we share our experience, strength, and hope about everyday life. From depression to connection, we cover all the issues you feel and see as you walk life's sacred journey. Listeners are encouraged to call in and contribute to the show because we all have hard-earned wisdom we need to share. Join us every week at the same day and time. And for today's show, we're going to be talking about the sacredness of life and what that means to you. So please feel free to participate or to just listen. So let me welcome my co-host, Kat Edwards. Kat, how are you tonight?
I'm fantastic. Thank you, David. And how are you?
I'm doing great. Absolutely on top of the world. That's largely because I'm here with you. This show means a lot to me, as does my friendship with you, and it's a great collaboration, and so it fills me with great joy.
Ah, as it does with me. It's something I look forward to every Monday here in Australia, Sunday in the North America. It's absolutely wonderful. I love it.
Great. Well, you picked the topic tonight, so I would like to start with you and see what motivated you to bring up the topic and a little bit about what it actually means for you.
Yeah. So, life's been a roller coaster for me over the last couple of weeks, and two significant events happened, and one of them was the loss of my mentor who taught me life coaching and who I loved quite deeply, Kathleen Casagrande. And she had cancer and passed on from the complications of cancer and receiving chemotherapy and whatever. And so that made me quite introspective and made me feel a little bit like I wanted to be alone a lot. And then I'm moving house, and I was moving my aquarium fish from the old house to the new house. And some of the fish in there threw their slime coat during the move out of stress. And in the process, 8 of my fish passed away from being in the same water as that slime coat that the other fish threw. I wasn't aware that they were going to do this. I've moved house with these fish in the past and never had a problem. But this just happened to be the one time this happened, and in my research I had not found that this fish would do that, but I certainly learned the hard way, and so I've been very sad. I don't consider fish in my aquarium as objects that I own. They are beautiful little friends who I hold a responsibility for, but they're domesticated animals, and as a result, I take on the responsibility of caring for them, but I do not own them because I see that life is sacred, and I don't see that I, as a sentient being, own any of life. I see that all life is a blessing and a gift and highly precious, no matter what stage of evolution that life may be. And that your passage through life and with life is deeply honourable. You know, that's not the right way. You should be honourable towards it, but it's very special. To have a consciousness that is aware of the sacredness of life, it means that we should uphold it as the highest experience of the divine mind that there is. Does that make sense, David?
Yes, it does. I read a definition on the sacredness of life, and it talked about it being the belief that all human beings at every in any stage of life, in any or every state of consciousness or self-awareness, are subject to the sanctity of life. And of course, you put it better, because I think it translates into every aspect of creation, not just human beings. And I mean, as you pointed out, you talked about your mentor and your fish, and they both were sacred beings, if you will. And you know, part of life is filled with feeling. All of it is filled with feeling. And to me, sacred is not just a state, it is a feeling within me that holds everything that I embrace to be precious. And so I'm glad that you brought up the topic today, because it speaks to me about my own journey in self-discovery and discovery that life is short and sweet, and that everything that is good needs to be embraced and cherished and nurtured. And, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of people overlook is their own inner beauty, their own sacredness, because we are all children of light and love and consciousness. And for those who believe in a higher power, we are all, what I believe is that we're all part of that higher power as it is a part of us. And that is life at its most supreme, because we're talking about a mass consciousness, one mind, if you will, all branches of the vineyard. There's so many different metaphors and ways to look at it, but life is precious, and I believe that it's important to honor all life. I think it's important to remain objective and detached so that we don't get into places of judgment. I believe it's important to embrace and look at life with compassion and love, and that we all have a sacred duty to protect and cherish life at any cost. And so those are just some of my thoughts. I'm rambling a bit, but that's all right. I'm entitled, as we all are.
Yeah, that's what we got the show for, so we can have a good ramble.
There we go. Yeah, and we do have a couple of listeners, too. And I recognize one of the numbers, the other I don't, and I tried to speak with you just to let you know. If you're willing, we would love to have some input from you later in the show if you have any questions or comments. If you care to share on the topic, that would be great. If you just want to continue to listen, that's fine too. So, Kat, what were you going to say?
Well, I've certainly had people look at me like I'm a bit strange, because I'll stop and save animals off the side of the road. And most recently, when I was at karate, I stopped what I was doing and picked up a little beetle that was on the dojo floor and took it outside. And I was given a few raised eyebrow strange looks, and I just said, well, all life is sacred, and I won't have this little fellow stepped on. Because that little beetle will eat whatever it's going to eat in the ecosystem and form part of the food chain. So it is extremely important. That one little being, it is extremely important. why shouldn't it be saved and allow it to live its natural course in its life? It's I think that we get caught up in thinking that only humanity is the most important, and then I see with great sadness the way psychopathic dictators around the world will have no care for the sacredness of human life and, you know, just toss people off the wheel of life as fast as they could look at them. And, we just have to look into current events as well as recent history and then go back to see how time and time again the sacredness of human life has been absolutely ignored, and an abomination towards it has occurred instead. We need to remember that all life is precious, all life is sacred. And I was reading Tomorrow's God, which is in the Conversations of God series, Conversations with God series by Neil Donald Walsh. Oh, 15 years ago, somebody gave me that book. And when I read this particular passage, it was like what I had been thinking deep inside of me, but I'd never been able to articulate, came out into reality, and I was then able to fast forward my understanding quite quickly. And that was that Neil Donald Walsh wrote that life is God and God is life. If you switch out the word God for the word life and focus on life being the highest of all in the universe, then suddenly you don't need to fight with anyone over religion or atheism, because damn well everybody knows life is real. And it is. You cannot say it is not real. And so therefore, at that point in time in my spiritual growth, I realized that if there was anything to believe in, it is life. If there is anything to know in, to have that absolute knowledge of, it is life. And if there is anything to worship, it is life. Life is all it is. And all it is life, or that which supports life. Who supports life? Things that are seen but are not in reality dead, such as a cut down tree that makes furniture, and that furniture supports the living beings who sit upon it. But then when you look into the molecular structure of that furniture and all the way down into the atoms and then deeper, you start to see life at its most micro capacity. When we start to explore life as in a scientific capacity, all we're doing is learning more and more about how life works. So when a scientist comes up to you and talks to you about physics or quantum physics or cosmic physics or something like that, they are only describing the physical manifestation of life. So I tend to take any deities out of it, and I'm more and more uncomfortable with the idea of a deity when I can turn around and I can see life everywhere. And by and large, it's good. And that is the most wonderful thing. Don't you think, David?
I do. I adhere to the expression that it's all good. Even those things that don't feel good shape us and mold us and help us become the people that we're meant to be. You know, there are a lot of atrocities that take place in life, and it's a big question mark as to why it has to be that way. You know, I certainly have found myself wondering why people can be so cruel to each other. And yet that's part of the mystery. That's the dark side. And as you've talked about before, Kat, there is a balance between dark and light. And I think that the lesson for all of us to learn coming out of darkness is, one, we know that we can become more compassionate persons when we've experienced things that have been hurtful. We can feel for people that are suffering. We can extend a helping hand to people that are in times of trial. We can embrace all of the highest human qualities that can be possessed, and we may be surprised at our inner strength that comes in circumstances that are trying on any level, be it mental, emotional, physical, or spiritual. There is a real flow to life. We've often talked about nature and how sacred that is, how centering that can be to us as humans. And I just, as I reflect on the topic, I think to myself, yes, you know, this is a beautiful world that we live in. It's a beautiful universe. Everything is in order, even amidst the chaos. There's a sense of order, and out of chaos comes great order. And I'm continuing to ramble, so I'm going to pass it back to you. And then we do have Al on the line, so I would like to come to him, too, to see what he has to say.
I'd love to hear from Al.
Okay, well, let's go to Al now. Hi, Al. How are you?
Well, good, David. Hello, Kat.
Hi, Al.
I was struck by what you said about life being God and God being life. I find that concept really interesting. I've oftentimes thought of a higher power as this amazing universe as a whole, but I like what you said about life, because it seems like for life to manifest, it takes so many different variables in the universe to come together. You know, in terms of environment and events and the whole chemistry of it, it's pretty astounding when life does come. It's probably a lot more common than we think. And I've also oftentimes just thought of my fellow man as, you know, I'm a part of them and they're a part of me, that we're linked. So what you said about life really appealed to me a lot. And I did have a question for you, too. I have you talked about putting bugs out of your house because of the reverence and sacredness of life. And I do that, too, but I'm selective about it. So, it got me, when you said that, it got me thinking about my choices of what bugs I decide to put outside and what ones I just decide to kill, you know, and I tend to want to kill flies and mosquitoes and stink bugs. You know, I put some spiders outside and moths outside. But the bugs that I kill, you know, there's obviously some fear I have associated with them, or, you know, whether it's, you know, they're dirty bugs and they're going to land on my food, or they're going to bite me, or they sting, or whatever. There's an otherness to them. And I was just thinking about that idea of otherness that separates us from other life at times in so many ways. And I wondered what you had to say about otherness and how it removes us from our reverence for all life.
That's a really great question. So, yeah, that little beetle, that was in the dojo where I go to for my karate training. But you are correct. I do also have insects that I don't like around me and insects that I say, oh, come on, out you go, send them outside. And the big three for me are flies, mosquitoes, and cockroaches. Each of those creatures have their place in the ecosystem, but they do also carry diseases, and you know, we know that to be a fact. And they have a disgusting element to them, their energy, and they bring with them filth. So there's not many creatures on the planet who have that kind of energy, but they do, and they have their purpose. Like I'd probably even look quite kindly upon a dung beetle more than I would upon a cockroach. Because the dung beetle, I can see it has its purpose in the ecosystem. Now, cockroaches clean up, you know, messes. They clean up old food. They clean up bits and pieces, but they are these disease carriers. So, to me, as David said, there's a light and a dark, and everything starts in the mind, everything. And so when we're looking at the spirituality of life, we know that every creature has a mind. And they've even been able to work out that some creatures have a higher functioning mind, but they don't have the spinal cord or the cerebral cord elements that you and I would have, or that a higher order being would have. So that's, you know, that's biology, and that's quite an interesting thing to go into as to why you would have a mind when you don't have the physical equipment to hold one. So minds are where it all starts, and when I look at the great spirit of life, I first and foremost look at the great spirit of life as a big divine mind. And it is a mind that has order and chaos within it so that it can grow. And so psychologists will talk about your own mind as your friend / enemy, your frenemy. And so surely as above, so below, surely the divine mind also has a bit of this aspect to it as well, friend-enemy aspect. And so it's the yin and the yang within the divine mind. And as the divine mind wants to grow, it's like a cellular organism. So when you were conceived, Al, you started as an egg and a sperm, and when they were joined together, you were a single-celled organism for a moment until you began to divide and divide and divide and divide and divide. And so the divine mind divides and divides and divides into many multitudes of souls. All souls have to grow up. They have to. They start as a soul that has no knowledge or experience, and it cannot have knowledge and experience as simply being a mind that has nothing more than just being a mind. It must manifest into matter and have a body and a life in order to learn and grow. And so souls will go through multitudes of bodies and earn their way up into a body like a human body as they learn and they grow. So souls that occupy cockroach bodies are far less advanced in their learning of who they are than, say, a soul that occupies a gorilla body. And so the cockroach body is still, it's in a survival mode. When you look at the way a cockroach is, it's pretty much in, it's a programmed instrument. You know, it's got eat, sleep, excrete, reproduce, that's it. And I don't know if there are any studies on cockroaches. Maybe there are cockroach behavior, and do cockroaches learn? It'd be interesting to find out. But cockroaches, flies, mosquitoes, other parasites, you know, bed bugs, all of them, they to me represent this sort of darker shadow element of the greater divine mind, in which all souls have to dwell so that they can agitate themselves enough to grow. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I kind of latched on a little bit. You were talking about chaos a little bit earlier, and I just chaos and order. Was it the way you phrased it?
But I was talking about that, I believe.
Oh, you were.
Yeah. Blow that up first.
Oh yeah, I was just because I know chaos theory. You know, that talks about seeming chaos, what looks like chaos, somehow over time orders itself again. You know, so I don't know. Maybe, can you relate that to what happens with the divine mind dividing itself up in ways that might not seem understandable on the surface, or might seem chaotic, but are ultimately going to become, have order to them?
Yes, well, in order to, I think it was Lao Tzu who said, if you want to learn about the great spirit, look at nature. Nature is your greatest teacher. She teaches you about divinity. And so, because divinity is fully expressed within her in a physical way. So the divine mind will get to learning about itself through agitation and peace, chaos and order. And you want to look at order not as the good, the best, the way it should be, but as the balance to the chaos. So it makes me think about somebody who has OCD and has to have everything completely clean, tidy, everything in its place, wash their hands 3 times a minute. You know, somebody extreme like that, the more that they go into order, the more they begin to become chaotic. So there has to be a balance between chaos and order. So an OCD person who's washing their hands several times a minute and keeping the house perfect, or, you know, has everything lined up, after a while, you know, at first it, on the surface, looks quite good, but after a while this is destructive. So the destructive element will always come through, no matter how much you try and keep it perfect. So when the divine mind has a shadow or a dark side, it is keeping itself in balance and in check. And so, therefore, we need to look at the shadow side and acknowledge it for its own purpose and therefore reverence. It doesn't mean that we need to all go out and become Satan worshippers or, you know, lop the heads off of pigeons and drink their blood or anything stupid like that. We're talking about it in an adult way, just for the listeners. We're being adults here. So the divine mind does not, you know, it is not perfect. It cannot be perfect. In fact, its imperfection is what makes it perfect. So, you know, if you were to look at, say, like a meerkat and their little house that they have underground, and how they keep it clean and how they keep pests out and they keep parasites out, and they'll kill little parasites and pests that they find go in there. That's nature keeping that dark element out. So if nature is saying, no, I don't want parasitic creatures in the nest of my meerkats, then it is okay for you to not want parasitic creatures in your nest as well. Just don't use some sort of chemical that is not, you know, that is going to hurt the planet in the process and hurt yourself. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yeah, it does. It makes a lot of sense. And I, you know, I like what you said about, you know, the balance of our shadow and light sides, because I think when we're willing to look at that in ourselves, we're much more in touch with our own humanity, and we feel much more of a connection with other people when we're able to see all sides of ourselves, and see ourselves as human and capable of making mistakes, but also capable of being doing good. And I think it's part of what connects us when we own both those sides of ourselves.
Yes, absolutely. And I know a lot about David's journey, and I can see how mature he is in when he looks back on his life, and he understands and loves and forgives that part of him that went into a destructive place. And that's really important to do. And therefore, in doing that, he's actually said that part of my life was sacred, even though XYZ happened and it cost him certain things that he can't have returned, or he has to rebuild or whatever. We all go through dark moments in our lives. If we can turn around and recognize that that too is part of our sacred journey, we can set ourselves free. I think, what was the topic last week, David? I think we were talking about emotional freedom, weren't we?
You know, it's interesting that you say that. I'm just going to check it out because I don't remember. It was a great show, I know that much. We were talking about, finding your way to self-love and freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the dark side of human nature, it sucks. I mean, I watch the news program China in Focus on YouTube, and the things that are happening from humans to humans in that part of the world, saddens me deeply. If there was a news program, Sudan in Focus, or Australia in Focus, or Indonesia in Focus, you know, I'd watch that too. I'm not particularly picking on that country, but the elements there are, you know, quite insidious and affecting the entire planet. What do we do with these people? We see how destructive they are. We see how much hurt they're putting upon the world. We're seeing how they're hurting their own people. But if we imagine that we are looking over the world from a third-person perspective, watching the great play act itself out in the drama that is going on right now, then we can see that there's elements of what the CCP are doing that are actually teaching us what not to do. And the major element that I can see there is their love affair with AI and what they're doing with AI is going to, and I'm hoping, have us turn around one day and say, we will never, ever do that again. Now we understand that we are creating a body of consciousness. We have stepped over the line from nature, and we now must pull ourselves in so that never, ever happens again. So That is why I think that they are where they're at. And you just have to look at other things that have happened on the planet, nuclear bombs being dropped where we've said never, ever again. DDT, the use of that, we've said never, ever again. So the destructive force of the divine mind teaches us how to be. And when we're going back to the topic of the show, the sacredness of life and what does that mean to you, we have to look at life completely. We can't only focus on the good.
That's an interesting point that you make, Kat. And what I was thinking as you were talking, you were talking at more of a global level, and I was thinking about what these things mean to me on a personal level. And of course, you referred to some of the challenges that I've had in my life. And what I've come to see is that every mistake that I've made does have a silver lining, and that is simply that it's a learning opportunity to turn my life around, change my life direction, change my behaviors, embrace the light, forgive myself, and move on in a more positive direction. You know, we live in a vibrational universe, and there are positives and negatives. I mean, we alluded to the duality of life, and I think that we need to be aware that that just is the case with life, that it's never going to be ideal. It already is ideal in terms of its process of becoming more complete. And it's hard for me to fathom that, but I see it more and more playing out. And, you know, of course, you know, it's wonderful that we've learned lessons about some things, but there are a lot of other evils in the world that have continued to be perpetuated. And so I think that what needs to be done from my perspective is to raise human consciousness so that we can get to a point where we say no more.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. We have to get to a point where we say no more. And if you reflect on the last 1,000 years and, you know, the medieval time and the Dark Ages and how the evolution of money came along, the banking system, the Knights Templar, going through the Industrial Revolution, finding oil, and coming up to today, you can see that there has been an element throughout all of that which has seen a hierarchy take control of the major population and then manipulate circumstances for their own gain in order to create more wealth and opportunity for themselves. That all needs to stop. And I feel that what we're experiencing today is a consequence of what our ancestors have done, you know, 500 years ago, 1,000 years ago. It's all just sort of steamrolled its way into the 20th century and now the 21st century in such a way that we have to now put our heels down as the 99% of the population and turn around to the 1% and say, you will not have power over me anymore.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Well, we're in agreement there.
Yeah.
Al, is there anything else that you'd like to share or reflect upon?
Well, I was, you know, sometimes when I lose hope, things seem to be going backwards at times. But when I look at the history of progress, what really seems to be happening is we're taking the two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back. Because when I think about the progress, even in my lifetime, it feels like – we've moved more towards, I think, what you're calling the light than we have towards darkness. But the thing that interests me about that is just, I wondered if you guys could comment on the one step back that we seem to take as a society and the role that it has for us in terms of moving forward.
You want to go, Kat?
Yeah, sure. So I think that when we're taking a step back, it's because old habits die hard, and there's an element there that wants to stay in the old place. And so we have to take a step back, relearn a hard lesson, and then we can move forward. So often, and not always, but just about every single time, the step back has to do with money. And it's businesses that want to exploit the planet, exploit life, and hurt in order to make money. So they have no reverence for the planet, for life, for other human beings, for the animals and the plants. They only have reverence for money. And so as a whole, humanity does take that step back while we're going through another round in the lessons to realize that, no, you can't do that. You can't do that anymore. And that two steps forward, one step back element is really what's been keeping humanity as a consciousness in a middle childhood to young teenage years state. We now have to mature. We have to grow up. And at some point we have to turn around and say, those habits, the want for money, isn't enough. Because at the end of the day, you know, as the great say, you cannot eat money. Once we've destroyed all the rivers, burned down all the trees, eaten all the animals, stuffed up all the soils, what's left? Nothing. We're screwed. And we're starting to see it now. David Attenborough was talking about how there's only about 34% of wilderness left on the planet. That's not good. In his lifetime, it went from like 64% down to 34%. And I read recently a National Geographic article that says that there'll be more pandemics, but they'll start to come out of nature, the viruses, because there isn't enough wilderness to contain them. We actually need the wilderness to contain the bacteria and the viruses that are naturally occurring out there. So we're going to kill ourselves. So at some point in the next 10 to 20 years, we cannot afford to take a step back anymore. We have to turn around to those that put greed first and tell them, no, you're wrong. And that's one of the reasons that my son and I have started a movement called Business for Humanity and Mother Earth. And it's on Facebook. We've got the little group. And it's focused on business and it discusses business. But business is the thing that screwed it all up, chopped down all the trees, polluted the waterways. It's all because of money, doing business. And a lot of the laws will favor business, you know, they'll favor the making of money over the care of the planet. And who are we if we are not the custodians of this planet? We are certainly not integral to her ecosystem. No humans and she'll thrive. No wolves and she'll start to die. No humans and she'll thrive. So, you know, we really have to wake up, because if we start to die out, it's no loss to planet Earth. None at all. I don't know if that was a rant or if that answers your question.
Well,
so, yeah, that's...
I,
I was looking at it from the standpoint of myself and my own life in terms of the two steps forward and one step back. I think it's almost as if I've needed to take a time out sometimes, and then I can slip into behaviors from my past that don't serve me. And so in a sense, it gives me a chance to have a wake-up call and then to start moving forward again. I think that, you know, we have a personal responsibility to move in a forward direction or we're not going to grow. And a lot of people, for whatever reason, don't seize that opportunity. They stagnate. They grow backwards. And, you know, that to me is a mystery. But I'm not a mystery solver. I just have to kind of take a look at these things and contemplate what it means to me, what it means to life. And, you know, as you said, Kat, this is a very introspective topic. And so I'm taking it a little more at looking at my own life and how that has had an impact on me viewing the sanctity of life and where I haven't done that and how I'm doing it now and how I would like to do it better. And I think that we all can benefit from that kind of introspection if we are indeed going to save ourselves and our planet, because we are all in it together, and no one of us is the center of the universe. And it is very much a joint effort if we are going to save ourselves and the planet. And I really liked what you had to say, Kat.
Well, thank you. Well, we have to turn around and start to focus on really how sacred the planet is. Life as we know it is here. But I think life is so amazing. It can manifest in any which way it wants. And I've read some articles of scientists are starting to entertain the idea that there may be gaseous forms of life. Why not? I mean, there's a creature on the planet, a little crab, that has copper-based blood. It doesn't have iron-based blood. And there's, why does life always have to be carbon-based? We're in the Goldilocks zone for carbon-based life. But what if there's life that we didn't understand, therefore we cannot detect, on Jupiter? What if there's life on another part of the Milky Way that is expressed in liquid form? Now, why does life just have to be in carbon form? I think that, you know, when you look at all the creatures in nature and you start to really think about nature as a full expression of the divine mind and of life, you cannot stop wondering about how it can express itself again, because it expresses itself in so many amazing ways. And because it expresses itself in so many amazing ways, it is sacred. Even if it is expressing itself in a cockroach and you get well, we call them thongs, you call them flip-flops. You want to ever slap it on the cockroach and kill it? I just think that's funny. That's just a side note. Australians call flip-flops thongs, and you call a thong a G-string. And, well, we don't, you know, that's underwear. Anyway, we should do a show on the different Americanisms and Australianisms.
Oh, that would be fun. That would be fun.
Yeah.
Al, do you have any last-minute thoughts that you'd like to share, or any reflections?
Well, yes. I just want to say it was a wonderful show. You're both very deep thinkers, and I think the biggest takeaway for me was this idea of this divine life that divides itself in order to grow, and that those divisions each need to learn themselves to grow more. I hadn't thought of it that way before, so that's something for me to chew on for a while and think about. So thank you for that idea.
Well, thank you for your participation, Al. We always enjoy your input and your presence and during the show. And we are getting towards the end of it. So, Kat, if you would be willing to honor us with a meditation, why don't we move into that now?
Let's do that. So, sit comfortably, or lay down, and squeeze your toes, and sort of wiggle your legs a bit, and wiggle yourself into a comfortable position. Get the last of your movements out. And take a long, deep breath in, and then just release it comfortably, very slowly and comfortably. Breathe in and breathe out. And another deep, long breath in and out. Feel how you are supported by gravity. And it feels like a hug. It feels secure and safe and loving. And notice all the sounds around you. And then begin to let them fade away into nothing. And any thoughts that come up, imagine that they're scrolling off the screen of your mind away. They are nothing. And now just see a circle. A circle before you. The circle itself is something. Within the circle is nothing. Surrounding the circle is nothing. Within the circle, in the nothing, there is thought. Outside of the circle, in the nothing, there is thought. Circle is something. Focus on the nothing within the circle. Look at it. There is nothing. Yet, as it gets closer to the rim of the circle, it becomes something. There is a moment between the nothing and the something. That moment is the becoming. Now imagine that you are in the nothing, in the center of the circle. And you are gravitating towards the something at the rim of the circle. And you are in the sweet spot now of the becoming. The becoming starts, the one down the side of the circle, and then swings around and through the circle and a hoop to make a two. And begins to swing around through the center of the circle and back to the side to make a three. And it swings around down one side, across another, and up to make a four. And then it swings around through the circle and around to make a five. The momentum's building, it becomes a six. And it's analyzing itself now. What is it doing? It is a seven. And here it is in full manifestation. It is an eight. And now it is at completion. It is a nine. And as it swings around, through, and then along the tail of the nine, it became to be a zero again, circle. Just a circle. A circle of nothing, becoming, and something, and then nothing again. All of this is the in and the out, through and the between, the action and the passive, the masculine, feminine, the divine mind, the divine great spirit of life, as you see before how it manifests itself into the many different ways. And now think about you, your soul, your inner being is the circle. It is the something. It is a divine mind within the divine mind. It is a child of the divine mind. It has nothing, becoming, something, and nothing again. Your inner being can manifest and bring to surface anything in life, experiences, possibilities, dramas, resolutions, material, objects. Your inner being, power, the divine mind. Place your mind's eye in the sweet spot between the nothing and the something, in the becoming. Think about what it is you need, and think about how sacred you are, your life, how precious. And in the becoming, you can have and be and do the kinds of things that make your life an instrument of sacredness. With this knowledge, come back into the room. Keep your memory on this circle of the nothing and the something and the becoming. Go back into it at any time. You need to feel the strength and the power of your own sacred life. Now it's in your own.
Thank you, Kat.
Thank you, David. And for all of you who are listening, please join us on Facebook, on our Facebook page for the show, The Healing Circle with David and Kat. And if you would like us to discuss a topic, please post it there or send us a private message. We love to hear from you. Thanks so much, Al, for joining us today. It's always wonderful to have you on the show. And please be sure to stay involved in the conversation. After the show, if you've been listening and you have something important you want to say, just put it in the comment section below the thread about today's show.
Well, thanks once again, Kat, and thank you to all who've tuned in tonight or who will listen to the podcast. Join us next week at the same day, same time. And with that said, I wish you all a good day and good night.